Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Unpack your knives and stay. Yes, stay. It is the Return of the Judges Roundtable Podcast here at Reality TV Rehapups. Hello, everyone. I am Antonio Mazzaro and Carne. I am here to talk this week with some of my favorite people who I talk about Top Chef with. Wow, what a stellar introduction. These are my very favorite people that I talk about Top Chef with. First, I want to talk to a man who has been rounding the globe in search of the best hot brown, Kurt Clark. Kurt, how are you?
I'm doing well. I don't think I found any hot brown on my travels, but, you know, I haven't made it down to Kentucky, so I guess I have to do that in the future.
Turkey and cheese, Kurt. Baked turkey and cheese. It's all about it, with a little gravy or a little Mornay, whatever you need. Speaking of turkey and cheese, I have no idea where I'm going to go with this segue. So one of the two other guests, please speak up so I don't single you out as turkey or cheese.
Choose.
Haley Strong. Haley, how are you?
You know, there's snow where I'd rather be right now.
Ah, it is snowing where you are. That is a deep cut joke for everyone.
I almost spewed coffee all over my laptop because I chose to drink at the wrong time.
I almost spit tea all over my computer, too, because I decided to laugh at my own joke.
Stellar. This is fantastic. We are also joined, and I'm so pleased to be talking to Emily Fox about this episode of Top Chef. Emily, is it snowing where you are?
No, just straight rain, Antonio.
Straight rain. Oh my gosh. The joke that came to my mind to make, I'm not going to make. So hard rain's going to fall on all of us one day, I think, is what we're really coming to. Is it going to turn to snow? This is a bad time, I think, in the Top Chef. I heard Mike Bloom is under a snowdrift somewhere.
Probably. I mean, that checks out.
It does. Something he likes to do. I don't want to share secrets about Mike. No, Mike is not here with us this week. Mike will be, I'm sure, writing about this episode of Top Chef as he has done all season at parade.com. So if you want to check out that, go to parade.com/member/Mike Bloom to check out all of his writings for Parade Magazine, including all of his Top Chef writing. You can also subscribe to this podcast. It's at robhasawebsite.com/Top Chef. That will get you all of our episodes of this Top Chef Judges Roundtable Podcast. We have talked about every episode of this season of Top Chef. And of course, because it's Top Chef Kentucky, I've been very excited to talk. And we are back centered in Kentucky this week. Very Kentucky-centric episode. Haley, were you aware that Kentucky had so many fine products and so much fine? Were you aware that Kentucky was the second largest or the largest beef producing state east of the Mississippi?
Yeah, I always heard it was called the beef grass state.
That's exactly what it is. Grass-fed beef. Kurt, have you sampled any fine Kentucky products in your travels?
I'm looking at a bottle of Maker's Mark right now. Does that count?
I sure it does. Absolutely. Red winter wheat, corn, that's such good stuff. Emily, were you excited that we were getting to more Kentucky-centric stuff this week? I know your food-based views should hopefully have you focused on local sourcing of ingredients. I mean, I think that was a subtly featured element of this episode. Not the cow, of course, but all the other fine ingredients on display in Kentucky. I feel like this is something they should be doing a lot more of on Top Chef, but it was nice to see it this week, I thought.
Yeah, I was really excited about that. I also loved Tom's plug towards the end of the episode where he was like, and as chefs, it's our duty to explain and close the gap between farming and table. And I just thought that was interesting. So we can talk more about that.
I would like to fill my gap.
Here we are. All right.
Wow.
Starting with a bang.
I'm so glad I didn't take literally. A sip of coffee then.
I do want to talk about that. Not that, Haley, but I want to talk about Tom's suggestion that there are kids growing up who don't realize that cows come from farms. I sort of laugh that off, but it sounds like, Emily, that might actually be part of a larger problem that's going on in the country.
I mean, I think I've certainly experienced this in my personal life with people who I've met throughout the years who say, oh, I don't like to eat meat on the bone. And it's like, okay, well, then why, you know, you're still eating an animal just because there's not a bone attached to it. So I do think that there is a general disconnect between agriculture and the consumer. Certainly, it's interesting to kind of talk about the different parts of the cow, which we got into in the episode. Oh, yeah. So I thought that was really fun. But yeah, I think he has a point to a certain degree. I mean, we all, you know that things come from farms, but to actually understand, you know, the cow as a whole, and to meet the people who raise the cow, I think that's a really, you know, interesting point.
And the satanic Italian butcher who carves the cow up with fervent glee. Unbelievable. I'm very excited to talk about my second favorite Italian ever in the state of Kentucky besides myself. So
I was wondering who the first was. So I'm glad we cleared that up. So yeah, early.
Definitely me. If you can't love yourself, you can't love anybody else. So there you are.
Now let the music play.
Deep truth.
Well, could speak the whole meat on the bone thing. I can talk to that maybe a little bit. And
so can I.
And maybe
I'm just kidding.
Wow,
I'm sorry,
did I just offend
guys.
All
I'm
of
so
you guys?
Sorry.
Josh has an uncle who literally eats the bone after he's done.
Oh. Well.
How are his teeth doing?
It's just it's just with like chicken wings. I think
he just like pops it in.
Yeah, because you can gnaw that down pretty significantly.
I'm okay. Yeah.
That's another story for another day.
I'm gonna take a hard pass on that. Yeah.
Does his uncle have floppy ears and four paws and a wagging tail?
Not since the last time I saw him, but things could have changed. You don't know.
Could have become a dog at some point. Yeah. I think I do like when Top Chef focuses on food education in a subtle way, right? And I don't even mind when they do it in a preachy way, but I like that even some of the chefs here were unfamiliar with the cuts of meat that they were getting.
Yep.
Because we're talking whole calf here, or whole cow, if you will. And we're looking at, that's good. We're looking at things that we don't see as consumers. So you're right, Emily. There is some disconnect, I think, between when we're cutting up a flank steak, like realizing what part of the cow that came from, or certain cuts of meat that we're not familiar with what it actually looks like when it's being removed from the animal that we know the shape of. That's certainly something that this episode gleefully put on display, but I thought it was good to see that some of the chefs weren't even that familiar with what was going on here. So we shouldn't, as consumers, I think, feel less than or feel like we're doing something wrong by not knowing this. But it is helpful to know. And I think it maybe does cause for some people, it's more difficult. I mean, I personally have not made a New Year's resolution, but I love pigs. I love talking to them. Sounds weird. I love hanging out with them. They're great animals. And so it's very difficult for me more and more to eat pork, even though I find that it's in a lot of what I like to eat. And seeing a pig butchered and carved up makes it even more difficult. So I know that wasn't the intent of this challenge, but it had an interesting effect on me for sure. And it sounds like maybe on some of you guys as well.
And there was, seemed like there was an inordinate number of like factual pop, like explanatory pop-ups in the lower left of the screen during this episode to kind of explain, what was going on in terms of like, you know, this is what this particular cut is. I thought that was interesting. But I also didn't realize, and maybe we'll get to this later, is when they drew knives, I was under the impression that they were going to be, oh, there's going to be like two or three knives for each cut. And so I was really surprised, just from my own education, to understand that every person got their own special individual cut that they had to work with. And I didn't realize that until much further into the episode. But I thought that was actually a really interesting approach for the challenge to take.
It's a good thing Brother Love wasn't left, or they would have just jammed those knives right into his side. Oh. Just like a bunch of Roman senators. They were so pleased that Brother Love was gone. We started the episode. Brother Luck, sorry. Brother Love is a WWE manager.
He's related to Melissa.
Brother Love is a classic WWE manager, so that's why I get confused. Brother Luck, I apologize. Brother Love is his stage name. He dances with his parents throughout Asia.
You know what? I completely forgot about that storyline.
So did I.
I was just like, wow, that was a thing, wasn't it?
I don't know how you could forget Mandingo Luck, Harry, but such is life, suppose. They're so thrilled that, Brother Luck is gone. Their luck has run out. Clapping, we will protect this house. It just seems like they're really digging the knife in at a guy who had a really rough go. And, of course, they don't know at this point what Brother has gone through with regard to Last Chance Kitchen and feeling as though he's over the competition. But it is, it's back to season 16 only and back to them focusing on what they're doing in the house. We also see Eddie talking to his son Roman on the phone. I thought that was really cute. Yeah, even though Eddie sounded like he was threatening him when he said he was going to kiss the shit out of him when he got home.
I never want anyone to say, I'm going to kiss the shit out of you. To me.
It definitely sounds like a threat.
It's so fun to see Eddie, who is portrayed as a guy who doesn't know how to exude emotion or a feeling or a facial expression other than pure anger, talk to his son in a way where it's horrifyingly lovely, I'd say.
Well, I also like the insight that his son Roman grew up on foie gras and caviar. I'm like, oh, that's lovely. Can you adopt me, please?
Yeah, please. Like, Kurt, will you talk like a baby if Eddie feeds you foie gras?
I think there's like dark corners of the internet where that's a thing, so I'm not even going to venture there.
All right. I'm sorry I set you up for that. Yeah, we're getting a little, I was a little worried for Eddie, actually. I mean, we start, obviously, when we do the reality TV edit and we start with like, this is my family and my parent passed away and I love my son. It's like, oh boy, this might not be a good episode for you. Obviously, it turns out to be very different, when we take Brother Luck out of the competition, and we have no focus on crazy stuff, we can actually start to focus on the contestants again. So that's good. And nothing against Brother Love, of course, Brother Luck, I should say. The guest judge for the quick fire, Lena Waithe. Who was thrilled to see Lena Waithe?
We were excited. Please don't take that as non-excitement.
Sorry, my microphone was muted. I was cheering.
I do like it when we have celebrities who are big fans of Top Chef come on, because they take it seriously. They're involved in the judging, and it certainly seemed like Lena was excited to be there. I like the challenge. This is definitely something, if you were to say before the season, what are the top 10 Kentucky things you might expect to see be prepared on this season of Top Chef, I think Hot Brown would have made the list for sure. It's not the most appetizing sounding dish, obviously. Mike told me, Kurt, to not let you say that it was your high school nickname. I said, and I think I've been proven right by the events of this podcast, that I was more worried about Haley saying it. So
how dare you, first of all. Second of all, double how dare you.
I think I dare correctly, it seems.
College nickname.
We have so many hotels in this season. I don't know how many hotels we have left in Kentucky that we could feature.
Let Haley shovel the driveway before a podcast. I think that's what we're learning.
I know. I have like way too much energy right now.
All you guys are just going to hear this entire podcast is me cracking up at you.
It's really good for my self-esteem.
Haley, did the hot brown look appetizing? Did it look like something you would normally want to eat?
I've definitely heard of hot brown before, but if you had to make me tell you what was in it, I'd say turkey and whatever else would not be at the top of the list of what I'd say. Would I eat one? Absolutely. Would I eat one without knowing what it was? Absolutely.
Yeah, hearing what it was, and given, actually, I really... underreported, Antonio, is how much I like croque monsieurs and croque madames. And I know that, you know, kind of Kelsey adapted her attempt at a hot brown into one of those. And so hearing it was like basically an open-faced turkey sandwich smothered in a Mornay sauce. I was very, very interested in trying one of these.
Emily, I know you probably aren't the biggest eater of croque monsieurs, or croque madames, I should say. But what about a hot brown? Is a hot brown something that you've had or that looked appetizing to you?
I get an open-faced turkey sandwich at a restaurant near our apartment, so I'm not closed off to this at all. But I think it would have to be the right combination of ingredients for me.
Depends on the sauce.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't look, I mean, it is not, it's never been something, even as a Kentuckian, that I've looked at and said, wow, I can't wait to get that. It seemed like the chefs felt very differently, that it looked so decadent, and it looked like, I mean, then maybe I've not had the Brown Hotel hot brown, so maybe that was something that really just jumped right out at them. I was glad that they got to taste one before they interpreted one. Mm-hmm. I think that's a much better way to do challenges like this, rather than just sort of tell them what a hot brown is or show them. You really gave them the opportunity to taste it. And to then let their imaginations run wild, which we saw to varying degrees of success. But it is something I think I prefer these quick fires where you're giving the chefs an opportunity, not just forcing them to do something. You're actually giving them a chance where they can taste the food and then interpret it from there.
Yeah. And the only thing that threw me about Lena Waithe being the guest judge here is it seemed like she'd never had a hot brown before that day either. Like, I think she even said during the judging, I've never had one, like, but, you know, here's my interpretation of this. So I think that her story was that, you know, she's on constantly traveling for work and she likes to, you know, try the local foods in different places. So I thought that at least there was going to potentially be a backstory, like a hot brown is one of my favorite, whenever I come to Kentucky, blah, 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 blah. But I think that was the only thing that threw me was that, like, she really had, other than that one taste she had of the Brown Hotels that was brought in, she'd had no real frame of reference for what a hot brown should be. She, for all she knew, she was just judging something that was turkey sauce and plated in a skillet.
Right. And it seemed like maybe definitely Justin and Sarah knew or thought they could expect that a hot brown challenge might be part of this season. Seemed like Eric maybe knew as well. But some of these other chefs, I don't think, I think they were more like Lena. I'm not sure that they had a hot brown or that they were as familiar. So it was interesting to see how this played out. And I like that we got to see a lot of different chefs, all the different chefs really have a different, slightly different take on what they were doing, whether they were making breakfast food, whether they were making hot chicken, something that spoke to more of where they were from or what they had done. Kelsey continues to make beautiful, delicate food, which maybe didn't play as well in this challenge. So I thought it was really good to see the again, we've talked a lot on this season about getting to know the chefs, learning about the chefs. I think now that we know them a little bit, it's good to see, it's interesting to see what their thinking is like when they're given a challenge like this, make a hot brown and interpret it your way and how that reflects in what we've seen them do throughout the rest of the season. I was really bummed though that Sarah just missed getting her scotch eggs on the plate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Scotch
not a great episode for her.
Not a great episode for a lot of people. But, yeah, but especially she wasn't quite a full on five hole, but she kind of just didn't perform where I was expecting her to.
She had a bad episode last week as well. I mean, she and Brian have been in the bottom two episodes in a row now. I don't know that necessarily says anything about what we should expect in the future. I hope they can both pull themselves out of what they're going through, because it can be tough, I'm sure. In this competition, you get inside your own head. You want to show your creative. I mean, in Sarah's case, we heard Tom remark at some point that she's trying to do things maybe on a little elevated level that she doesn't normally do them. I'm not sure that that's true, by the way, but his observation is that Sarah is trying to maybe play to the competition more than letting the competition play to her in terms of really delivering food that speaks to her strengths as a chef. Even though we'll talk about in the elimination challenge, she was faced with a very difficult part of it. So any of the food, Emily, jump out to you from the quick fire, things that look really good or that you immediately wanted to eat or you thought were a really good interpretation of this challenge?
I just thought it was really interesting how Brandon put so many vegetables into his, you know, and Padma even remarked on it where she was like, oh, thank God there's like one vegetable here. Cause I thought that was really going to play against him, but it ended up being, you know, keeping him kind of in the middle and safe for the challenge at least. So that was good. And then I would also say, yeah, the croque madame just didn't really seem appealing given sort of the breadth and scope of what everybody else was making. It just seemed way too delicate.
I am, Kurt, underreported like you, a huge fan of the croque madame. And like I said, Kelsey just continues to make food that looks like something I would really want to eat. So I definitely understand her thinking in terms of making it a delicious, decadent sandwich like that. I had a great croque madame, probably the best one I've had, at a restaurant of a chef in New Orleans whose name is redacted from this podcast because he has great hair but is an asshole, apparently. His name is redacted, but I had a really great croque madame at one of his restaurants in New Orleans.
Can you rate our Skype chat who that was? Because I'm not picking up on the clue.
Just look up Top Chef Judge that everyone fawns over his hair in New Orleans, and you'll find him, I'm sure.
Is it Emeril?
Even though I don't know.
Are you talking about Emeril?
Yes, Emeril has the famous for his hair, Emeril Lagasse, known coiffed chef.
Those Emeril beautiful Lagasse. Ringlets.
How dare you, everyone? I'm leaving. I feel personally attacked.
And for the ringlets comment,
you don't know what it's like to have to have shoveled 2 feet of snow in your driveway and then come in and do a podcast.
So on brand for Canada today.
It's
Haley,
like you're going through the brand. 6 stages of grief that we got in the driveway. It's like you're something with these swings. I'm not understanding that.
Oh gosh.
I was a little thrown by the hot chicken, hot brown. I'm not sure. I like hot chicken. Yes. I know I like hot chicken, but I'm not sure about it with like a creamy gravy or a creamy cheese. Ugh, so I just don't know.
No.
Yeah.
I was actually Justin's winning dish. Between the Gouda, the maple mornay, the grilled bread, his Kentucky fried breakfast brown sounded really good to me. Your purple Michelle, I almost called her Melissa again. I tweeted about her as Melissa, and Antonio called me out for it. Like, you know what? It's fair. But the fried turkey, what was it? The fried turkey jam.
She had turkey ham.
Ham. I had fried turkey jam in the notes and crispy potatoes.
I was like, fried turkey jam sounds great.
Yeah, I'm going to edit that right now. But then David's turkey tenders. You don't really see turkey tenders a whole lot, but the blue cheese sauce and the chipotle bacon jam. Oh, there was a lot here. I would have loved to have actually been a judge on this one.
I'm sure Emily would not have, because there were tons of eggs in this challenge.
Yeah, I would have just been sitting on the sideline being like, that looks good.
You can hand me your serving.
Okay, fair enough.
The bottom three of the challenge were Sarah, because she was unable to finish. Brian, who's, I know I said that hot turkey with cheese sauce really wouldn't mesh with me, but apparently his ate dry and needed sauce. And then Kelsey, who didn't seem like the decadent late night munchies dish. And the top were Justin, because he really crushed it, and Eddie and Adrian. We didn't really talk about Adrian's dish. Adrian's, I thought, looked really good. She had a fried turkey tender on cheesy garlic bread with a bourbon corn puree, pickled corn, Swiss chard, jalapenos.
I wanted to eat this one.
You wanted to eat this one. Yeah. This. She's making really good food, I think. Underreported, as Kurt would say.
Totally.
Yeah.
So there are the top three. Eddie is smiling again. We get a remark about what Eddie's face looks like. Poor Eddie. No one. I don't think anyone's face has ever been more the subject of Top Chef talk besides Emeril's ringlets of hair, I guess. But Eddie makes it to the top. Adrian makes it to the top. Eddie's smiling. But Justin wins. And this, I think, if Sarah couldn't win, I'm glad Justin won, because I'm glad somebody who understood the food and who pays tribute to the food regularly with their menus was able to pull this out. And his dish looked really good, sounded really good. So I'm glad that Justin was able to get the win here.
Yeah, it was. I was glad that we weren't set up completely that one of the people who were, this is their specialty, they just fail on it. So it was, even though we don't know how Sarah would have fared, so we can't say that she failed on the dish. It was just on the timing. So I was glad to see that a local did win something that was in their wheelhouse. That was nice.
And then we bring in the guest judge, who has a chase for perfection. What is this chase for perfection? Does anyone know about Nancy Silverton's chase for perfection? Emily, is this something we should be knowing about, or is this not even on your radar?
I mean, she does seem like a bit of a control freak when she's making things. And she's known for having really high standards with quality and variety of ingredients. But beyond that, I'm like, I don't know.
David apparently was very, I mean, they always find a way, and they did it with Eric, with Lena Waithe. He was like, she's in Ready Player One. And I'm like, were you really thrilled that she was in Ready Player One, or were you just reciting a line? But, we have David calling Nancy a god and saying her chase for perfection is one of the most admirable things in the world. Her chase for perfection apparently involves Kentucky ingredients. So I'm on board with that. Mm-hmm. We see a cart wheeled out of native Kentucky ingredients. And Padma talks about how Kentucky makes cows. Who knew? I thought it was the horse state.
That would be a much slower derby.
Sorry.
And a horse food challenge would be much more disgusting. So here we are.
Oh, my God.
But the elimination challenge, as we talked about earlier, is the chefs are drawing knives, and they're each getting a different cut of meat, and they must create a dish centered around the cut of meat that they draw. The cow is coming from Fox Hollow Farm in Kentucky, but the surprise, a surprise carne, a surprise devilish Italian man entering into the fray here, is that Dario Cecchini is coming into this episode of Top Chef, all in red, with giant knives, eyes glowing red, showing these chefs exactly how to break down a cow. Kurt, I know you were thrilled when Dario showed up.
He has to be my favorite guest on the show. Like, he was just chewing up the scenery, slicing at it with knives in each hand. I just was like, who is this guy? And I'm realizing that, you know, people in the know him. This is completely my ignorance, but it was completely just enjoyable just to watch what was going on here. And I fear for Nancy. is she okay?
No one has heard from her, but I heard her flank is quite delicious.
Oh my God.
Haley, Dario, terrifying or exciting?
Terrifying. I've consumed way too much true crime in my lifetime to be comfortable with what was going on.
It's not like this. Be like, he was such a quiet neighbor. Who would have thought? I mean, like, no. So, like, if anything did happen, I think that, you know, he'd be an immediate suspect.
He could happen. That's my thing. I'm very delicate.
He'd do it really well, though.
That's true. Nothing would go to waste.
Great tribute to your life. He would say she looked like she was very happy.
That was my favorite. He's looking at the steak, and you could tell this was a happy cow. Okay.
Okay. Emily, where's the needle for you on Dario?
It's sort of in the middle where I respect him and I think they pay great, great tribute to him, but I also don't want to be on his bad side.
Carne. It is Michelle who says, like, he doesn't seem to know many English words, but he has a favorite one. Is carne an English word? Anybody? Nobody?
No.
No, definitely not.
I fact checked that one pretty quickly.
Instant fact check from Kurt Clark. Live as we're happening now. It doesn't matter. I think he made it an English word. Like, for me, I think he uses it so often. This is it. Like, this is an English word at this point. And how dare anyone tell him that it's not an English word?
That's
because
true.
You're going to get a butcher's cleaver.
Yes.
No. So some of these cuts of beef, I mean, he's just ripping them out of the cow almost ceremonially, which ritualistically, which is terrifying. He's like humming while he's doing it. And he's just slamming them down on the table in front of the judges. Some of them are lesser known. I think for me, like Spinalis was one that I'm not sure what's going on there. And then Sarah got the plate, which I have heard of, but I'd not really ever seen it like that. So there's some interesting stuff happening here. And there were some organs on display here that I'm just like, what even is that? It's pretty jarring to see the cow just laid out asunder like that for all to see, unfortunately. And I don't know how that happened. Decca is like in the middle of downtown Louisville, this restaurant. And I just like I fantasize about somebody just dragging that cow down the street and in the middle of Louisville. And I don't know why I fantasize about it. That sounds a little weird.
That is a little weird.
Yeah. I guess I'm more on the excitement side of Dario.
I'm
not
worried about
side.
You too now, Antonio.
You should be. Any of these, did anybody feel like when a chef drew a particular cut that they were in big trouble? Emily, was there any cut that you felt like from what you've eaten or from what you like that you felt like, okay, this could be really bad for this chef?
I mean, I think brisket even though it ended up being a great choice for Eddie and working out for him the way that he prepared it, that is a tough piece of meat that requires a lot of slow, low cooking to kind of make it tender and delicious. So I'm really happy with how that ended up turning out. But I was also like, ooh, like, how are you going to do this in this time frame? So
that makes a lot of sense. And that is one of the ones that Dario singles out, of course, as one of the most difficult pieces to work with. And yeah, your familiarity with brisket, of course, most people is that you do cook it slow and low for days on end, or it's something
maybe not take, that long, but
take a cheap cut of meat and you make it a better cut of meat because of the time and attention you pay to it. So that's part of it. And clearly he had to that I think directly and significantly influenced his thinking. And maybe it helped him because it restrained him and put him in a position where he felt like he could only do a certain thing. I think the freedom on some of these cuts of meat for some of these chefs was their downfall. And certainly we can talk about that. Haley, were any of the cuts ones that jumped out to you like, okay, I can't wait to see what they do with blank?
I don't think so. I was pretty, like, it felt like any of these things could have been screwed up or elevated.
Yeah, it seemed like the, and like, I'm not terribly familiar with a lot of like the differences in the cuts. I'll say that's why I actually appreciated those little pop-ups in the corner, like where they're explaining, oh, the, and you know, correct me if I'm getting this wrong, but like, you know, the chuck cut that Michelle got, that's often the kind that you'll end up being, you know, turned into hamburgers. So I was getting educated as they went along, but I think where a lot of the chefs, I'm sure we'll talk about this, a lot of the chefs went wrong was that they tried. The people at the table want a celebration of carne, and they almost felt that the chefs weren't being true to either themselves or the primary ingredient of beef here. So I think it wasn't so maybe, I don't know if it was so much an unfamiliarity with the cuts as it was their approach to what they wanted to put on a plate.
It always seems like there's one episode per season where everyone just tries way too hard and then overthinks it. So I spent most of my day yesterday watching season 10 of Top Chef because there's this new great streaming service in Canada called Hey You that's just reality television. And they have every season of Top Chef. So you better believe I'm going to make my way through all of them. Anyway.
Is it the Canadian cuts or the Canadian cut is the best cut of the cow, obviously. But do you get the Canadian edits or the American edits?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you. Hard to say. Anyway, so I recently just watched the episode where they went to the Pike Place Market and got all of these ingredients and then invited like the makers of those ingredients to be judges. And everyone just screwed the pooch on it. And that really felt reminiscent to this week's episode, where it's just like everyone screwed up and did not, you know, do too well for this.
Yeah. So is it a matter? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
With the pickle, is that CJ with the burger with the pickle? Is that what goes on?
I nearly cried. That is one of the funniest moments. Say what you will about Hugh Atchison, and he's such a douche. But God, sometimes he's funny.
I've eaten in a restaurant with Hugh like two booths down from us, and Josh didn't notice the entire time. And I was like, how do you not see him right here?
How do you not and feel his presence?
How do you not notice his unibrow?
I was like, going to say, how can the unibrow not just like, you know, call to you from across the restaurant?
I know. Seriously.
But he is Canadian, I think.
He is indeed.
Is that correct? Yeah. So you're allowed to call him out.
One of us.
I love Hugh, and I think he's very funny.
Did you say I love you too?
We love you too.
Off the rails. So you're right. It's funny you say that, Haley, because I was wondering, and
I was wondering as we're sitting here. So far.
No, this is not the most funny thing. Actually, I think this is, you're really onto something. I wonder if it's in the middle of these seasons or a few episodes into these seasons where the chefs are still feeling each other out, and they're still getting to know each other and they're still trying to impress each other, whether they're not doing what is best for them, because the typical Top Chef story arc for a successful chef testing is, I really found my voice. I found how to streamline my food. I found how to make food that is mine. That's the story that Top Chef loves to tell. And that story involves involves coming in, maybe trying to do some things you're not comfortable with, getting out of your comfort zone, trying to impress these other chefs, trying to stand out from all these really talented people who are doing these incredible things instead of just focusing on doing you. And I know that's the Shirley Chung story. She came in as a shadow chef, and then she, by the end of the series, is doing really Shirley food. And that is a story that she tells on the show repeatedly. I wonder if we're seeing that this kind of episode here, like everybody's sort of concerned about what the Joneses might be doing or what each other might be doing. So instead of just doing their food and really focusing on what they know they can do well, which is what Eddie does to success, they are trying to elevate the meat and really trying to impress and stand out among a group that they're still trying to impress. So I wonder if there's an episode every season like this, because this is part of the normal Top Chef cycle where they try to impress each other or they're trying to stand out or be like the other people and do things they're not familiar with. We've seen Brian do that almost all season, right? Like cook food in a way that he's not comfortable with, or that's not his food, because he's trying to really go beyond what he does instead of doing what he does really well.
I wonder too, though, if people get psyched out with the actual farmers at the table, to Haley's point, like having somebody who is the purveyor be there and just thinking to yourself, oh God, I have to make this the best possible piece of meat, and then just completely throwing themselves off with it.
That is underreported, as Kurt would like to say. Like, maybe they were all just terrified of Dario, too. Like, maybe that was part of it.
Do you think someone should have just made a burger?
With a pickle on it?
Yeah.
Yeah, possibly. The chuck would have been good for that, for sure. Kurt, do you think there's anything to this? Like, or what do you think is the cause for, like, a real clunker episode like this? Because Tom excoriates the chef at the end of the chefs at the end of the episode. It's basically like, hey, pro tip, you do you. Don't try to be something you're not. Like, you make your food, everybody. You've all screwed this up because you're not being yourselves. Is there something to this? And what do you think might be the cause of it? Is it the judges? Is it the other chefs? Like, what is causing this, Kurt?
Let's see. Now, we just got out of, well, we just kind of returned from Restaurant Wars. We had one interim competition after that. I'm thinking it is more the other chef testants. And I don't know, maybe it's just a matter of who's the person that really kind of communicates to the group first what their dish is going to be. Maybe who that first mover in the kitchen, so to speak, sets the tone for what everybody else feels expectations for that competition might be. We know Brandon and David, went out first. So maybe let's say Brandon and David, they were both doing this tartare, and they're conversing with everybody about, you know, what's going on. Or we see in Whole Foods is really when people start communicating what their dishes are going to be. So maybe it's just whoever that first most vocal person is, they maybe set the tone for what the rest of the chefs kind of at least like lean into a little bit more in their choice of cuisine.
It also, what you're saying there makes me think of something, which is that a lot of seasons do have a pace setter overall. You have somebody who is across the board doing well in a lot of these challenges, who's really starting to stand out, and they put the chefs in a position where they have to respond to that. We don't really have that as much on this season. The people that have jumped out quickly, like Natalie and Nini, have gone home. So there isn't like a true pace setter or even a real group of pace setters. We're starting to see that emerge a little bit, but it's been more varied. And I think without that on the season, I think what you're seeing is people still maybe flailing around a little bit and still struggling to find what they see their place in the competition is. Justin, when he wins the quickfire, says, like, I've been in the middle and I really wanted to win and stand out. I'm not sure people are finding their groove yet across the board.
I had trouble when I was talking. I was like trying to at the same time remember, well, what was the challenge last week? And last week was the drink pairing, but the drink inspiration challenge. And so they just came off of a challenge where they were being asked to, dig into a cocktail as creative inspiration for a dish and to think outside the box and to really kind of be exploratory. And it's kind of a hard turn to go from that into something that's like, you know, just celebrate beef. And so I'm wondering if there were still a little bit of momentum and trajectory from this kind of creative, open, explore the possibilities challenge when the chefs were really looking for something that was maybe a little bit more, you know, simple and straightforward, and not, and a majority of the chefs weren't able to kind of make that turn.
Well, and what we see, of course, is that, as we're saying, with the simple and straightforward versus creative, some chefs like Eddie and Sarah are put in a position based on the draw that they have where they feel a little more limited in what they can actually do with the meat. And I think Eddie very wisely makes the choice he makes. And he's asked about that. Right. And he says, like, well, I knew right away with the cut I had, like I had limited options. So I knew what I wanted to do. And Sarah, I think, makes a wise choice as well. It doesn't work out for her in the same way for other reasons unrelated to the choice architect. She made the right call. And I feel bad for Sarah. This episode was like not a good episode for her, but maybe not for the worst reasons. I mean, we see she tries the hot damn hot brown, or she has the hot damn hot brown on her menu. She tries the Scotch egg hot brown, just doesn't get it on the plate. She talks about how she and her husband, Austin, shout out to Austin, have the farm. They are familiar with these products. This is something they do. She knows based on the cut that she gets that she needs to make sausage, but I guess the sausage casings really come back to bite her and they rattle her. And she's in a situation like Brian was last week where she's pivoting on a dish, in a way that probably, does not do justice to the idea that she had. So I think in some cases, the cuts of meat put these chefs in a position where they felt like they had to do it a certain way. But what about the one that seems to cause the most problem with this, Emily, is Brandon and David, with the cuts of meat that they get, and the choice that they make for tartare. What did you think about the motivation for this choice, with the tartare for the cuts that they both got?
I just feel like it had to be perfect. And that's a really hard thing to do, for a tartare in general. And both of them doing a tartare up against one another just felt like a poor choice. Even Tom says, you know, this is a missed opportunity. I don't know why you guys are doing this. So, you know, right off the bat that maybe one of them needed to try something different, but like, you know, Nancy even talks about the texture and needing to be a certain way. And, you know, it just feels unfortunate for both of them in a way. I don't know.
We'll talk about the xanthan gum for sure, because that comes into the texture.
Yeah.
Loin, which is, I think, what I think that's what Brandon had. And then the round, which is what David had, are both things that are roasted commonly. Haley, do you think a roast would have been more successful for either of these chefs, considering they didn't do well with the tartare?
Yes, but hindsight is 20/20.
Right. And it just seemed like maybe Brandon Haley who has said his choice was motivated in part because he'd already made like steaks and things that you would normally make out of a loin in this competition. So he didn't really want to get into a position where he was doing the same thing that he'd already done. And that maybe that kind of choice is something that hurts him at that point.
Yeah. And Brandon just kind of seems like the type of guy who, wants to go the extra mile to impress people. Like he wants to be looked at as impressive. And I feel like making a tartare could be impressive, but it's just, it's needlessly fancy.
I would present the flip side of that, that he's the sort of person who likes to challenge himself as well.
Okay. I can take that.
Yeah.
I can take that, but it's just, again, it's both sides of the coin lead to needlessly fancy.
Yeah. And I think, and to your point, Antonio, he did say that the previous kind of meat challenges he'd had, he didn't feel like he'd had the best success with those. And so he didn't want to put himself in the position of potentially, you know, underperforming with the same sort of preparation again. So he felt that he needed to do something completely different because the last two times just didn't really work out the way he wanted them to.
I will say when he came into the competition cooking those things right off the bat, he's like, New York, this and steak that. And I'm just like, so this guy just cooks meat. Like, this is what he does. So I get that he might not want to have been seen that way, and didn't want necessarily that to speak to the kind of chef that he was on the show. So I understand that choice, but I think, Haley, what you're saying about it being, being too cute or too fancy, that's exactly what Dario says, right? He basically says there is no soul of the meat here. It's all frou-frou. And Tom nods at him and says, absolutely. And I think that maybe is speaking to the larger discussion we're having about why people are making the choices they're making, why they're choosing to treat the food in a certain type of way. And it goes right back to Haley, whether you want to make a burger with a pickle on it, right?
I want to make a burger with a pickle on it. I don't want tartare. I want a burger with a pickle.
This is a debate that the chefs face on Top Chef, and it's a very difficult and brave. It's sometimes braver, and I probably most of the time braver, to do something more straightforward and to be a little more simple, but to put it out there. And I'm not talking about a crudo.
Yeah,
like, yeah, elevate it.
You can do simple, but make it amazing. And that's a lesson that's taught every single season of Top Chef.
And I'm sure that that's the most difficult thing, and it is separate what separates the wheat from the chefs, if you will, is that I really reach for that one. It's that ability to do that, right? Like, I think there are people who can consistently do that and do it in a way that isn't gimmicky and do it in a way that is intelligent and it's still delicious. And then there are people who don't always necessarily try to do that, that are still fantastic chefs that come on the show and then try to do that in a way that doesn't speak to what they normally do, and they get in trouble for it. So that is the difficult line that I think we see, as you're pointing out, Haley, in almost every season of Top Chef. It certainly seems to have been front and center in this challenge. And the chefs like Eddie, who is just doing Polish food, and he's doing something that he is familiar with and that he's excited by. He's elevating it in the way that he's presenting it, for sure, but it is not something that he's going crazy by doing. This is, I think, he really hits the sweet spot of this challenge in a way that the other chefs seem to maybe struggle to varying degrees in the rest of this challenge. What else stood out from the elimination challenge? I'm trying to think. The sausage casing we talked about, Sarah had a real problem with that. She ended up having to saute them. I thought it seemed like Justin did pretty well, right? He mixed a flank steak with creamy polenta, braised mustard greens, local carrot puree. He seemed to really understand not only the cut of meat he had, but the best way to deliver it so that it wouldn't disappoint and so that it would hit on what people expected from the dish.
Right. And perhaps it's overreported at this point, but my love of blackberries, Adrian's black and blue New York strip, which incorporating blackberries and blue cheese, was like, please, yes, 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 yes. And interestingly, we had the same top three for the quickfire and the elimination in Justin, Adrian, and Eddie. So they were like en fuego this episode. Kudos to that trio.
You mean kudos to that trio?
Oh my
yes.
God.
Yes.
I love it. I want to ask you, Emily, in any of the food preparation you've done, have you ever had a grapeseed oil accident? Oh.
Yes, actually, wow. I have.
This is why you ask the questions.
A certain almost 6 years ago, Josh Wigler and I got married, and we had a party 2 weeks later to celebrate our marriage. And maybe the Thursday before the Saturday party, I was cooking a piece of fish on the stovetop with grapeseed oil, and I was trying to really crisp the skin up. And I put a little too much oil in that pan, and then I went to flip the fish, and it flew back onto my neck.
Oh, my God.
And burned the whole front of my neck. Oh. And I had to wear a scarf at the party. I had to go to the dermatologist and get Silvadine.
Spread some xanthan gum on there?
Yeah, seriously. It was pretty bad. And even the dermatologist was like, this is a really bad burn, and it's going to take a really long time to go away for you because you're so white. And and it used to get really red when I would drink.
Oh my God.
And now it's mostly gone years later.
He meant pigmentation, not culture, I'm assuming.
Yes, yes, yeah. Although I am very white culturally as well. I understand the grapeseed oil conundrum and the issues around it, and I try to be very careful and sparing with it in my preparation with food now.
You do realize a damn high smoke point.
High smoke point.
You do realize now that all of us co-hosts and anybody who's listening to this, the next time they see you at a live event, are going to say, do you still have the grapeseed oils, burn? Can we see it?
I mean, yeah, it used to get really red, and it was just like this like little column right where like I would have an Adam's apple if I was a dude. But like now,
like I just want to know, like I just want to know the logistics of the fish flying out and just hitting you in the neck.
I was really not paying attention because I was so tired from getting married. Like, it was one of those things where, like, you're just overstressed and you have, like, we thought it was a great idea to have a small wedding and then do a party 2 weeks later. And then we realized, like, that was a terrible idea. And it just prolonged, like, all of, like, the stress and anxiety around, like, having to entertain the masses and have the same conversation with, like, 100 more people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was not great. And then at the actual party, I just kept like greeting everybody as they walked in and being like, this scarf's not part of my original outfit. I actually burned myself horribly. And people were like, oh, okay.
What month was this?
Oh, totally.
Okay. I would love to see it.
We both looked so tired in that entire party. We looked terrible.
What month was this?
This was in August. Yeah.
Oh, the
August
old August
10th.
Scarf. Everyone knows.
I was so sweaty.
Famous scarf month, August.
And did the burn burn more from being under the scarf in the heat?
I had a bandage around it. And actually, if you look back into Josh's Instagram, you'll see that I had gauze around my neck on our honeymoon. And that's what that was from.
Guess he's doing a deep dive right now.
Yeah, yeah.
So glad I asked.
I didn't really think I'd be telling that story, but there you go.
How could I have known?
I'm glad you didn't come to me with that question, Antonio. Yeah. It's much more boring.
That's really funny.
Yeah. So don't do any like serious frying right before you get married. That's my takeaway. And also don't have a party after you get married. Just do the wedding. Like, it'll be fine. The people that don't get invited, like, screw them.
There you go.
Kurt, I almost hesitate to ask, but you live in a Polish part of the country, a very Polish city. Have you ever had a golumpki?
It's been a while. I'm actually, my heritage is Polish. I'm a 25% Polish on my mom's side, and I've had a golumpki, but not in a while. It looked amazing. That's all I got for you. Yeah, this between that and Adrian's dish, I would have ordered both. I also love beets. So the golumpki with the beet and berry sauce, sign me up.
Are there parts of Chicago where you walk through and you just see meats hanging in the window in the Polish neighborhoods?
Oh yeah, definitely. Like over towards kind of the south side of Wicker Park near Ukrainian Village. There's a heavy. Actually, I think the Polish Heritage Museum is there. If I went to that, so yeah, definitely you get some of the kind of classic delis here in Chicago. So definitely an area town to visit. One of the things I learned when I was in my travels in London, I went on a culinary walking tour of Borough Market, and that's one of the things I want to do whenever I visit a new city is go on like a food tour. And it just struck me that I've not even looked at what ones are available in Chicago, so I need to see if there is like a Polish culinary walking tour of my own city and hit that if I can.
That sounds pretty cool. Just maybe don't do it in a month in the winter. Just do it in August. Everyone's wearing their scarves.
Maybe it'll be cheaper in the winter, though. Okay, so I found the photo.
I was going to come to you, Haley, and ask this. That was my next question. Did we get it?
Truly the best photo I have ever seen in my entire life. Because Emily looks... I've never seen somebody bandaged and looks so fancy. Like, she's holding a glass of white wine with, like, her gorgeous sunglasses. Like, she... I wish I was that Emily, and like doing a deep dive on Josh's Instagram makes me deeply jealous that I didn't get to marry you.
I'm getting like a Sunset Boulevard vibe from that photo.
It's so good. Yeah, it's the best.
We had just gotten to Maine and I was just like, I need to own this.
And you own it, you do.
Thank you.
It's majestic. Like that is my 2019 vibe.
Haley, and then we promptly watched The Sopranos for like the next like 5 days and didn't talk to anybody. It was amazing.
Yeah, that sounds like the perfect timing. Oh, sorry. Yeah. I just quick aside, there's an even better one of Emily eating lobster while wearing her bandage. I'm so sorry, Emily. This is meant as like an ode to you and not like making fun of you.
Oh, no. It's totally fine. Okay.
Sorry to the audience that this is a completely visual thing.
Can we potentially, I know this maybe link this in the show notes. We've got the links now.
Totally fine, guys. Go for it.
You'll have to follow Emily Fox on Twitter and request them, or follow Josh at Round Howard on Instagram, or Emily on Twitter, Mlet, like omelet with an E, to locate some of these photographs if you're really
interested. They're like little Easter eggs.
Yes.
They're little Easter eggs.
Which you're allergic to.
Yes.
Haley, if you want to see someone wrapped in gauze and sunglasses, I think maybe you just need to go to Palm Springs. I don't know.
I don't know if I can afford that.
Yeah, why do it when you could just go on Instagram and you know where the pictures are at this point? So there you go. What else from the Elimination Challenge?
Are we still talking about Top Chef?
Yes, what else from the Elimination Challenge, unrelated to neck burns, is... something we can talk. Was neck one of the cuts? I can't remember. Did somebody singe it? Was that something that happened in the episode?
Let's talk about Eric's head cut, because I felt really bad for the fact that his braised cheeks were so small. And also
was the best part.
And also, like, the beef tongue mousse, right? Like, everyone was upset about that.
How is it that when Mike Bloom leaves this podcast, it is way more full bloom than when Mike Bloom is on it? I don't understand. Yeah, the dots of cheek is not something that I expected to see in this dish.
That's pretty much straight up what Tom said. He's like, what's up with the dots of cheek? I'd say maybe it just wasn't shown in the edit was, it seemed like a lot of the trouble that Brandon fell into with his dish was because he accidentally spilled more grapeseed oil into the tartare than he wanted to be in there. It wasn't like it was a choice to put that much in, but then he tried to think, how can I, counteract this? How can I kind of, react to this, this error?
Quick question. Sorry to interrupt.
Yes.
But didn't he put it in the grapeseed oil into a sauce? Like, couldn't he have started the sauce over, maybe?
That's the only thing I
confused?
Don't know. Yeah, I wasn't entirely sure. I didn't know if that was a component he could have. Yeah, obviously, the other option would have been to start over that component. I don't know what the time was, because they were serving first. I'm not sure what that timeline was, but I think that would have been potentially their option. But I was just surprised that it didn't come up at judge's table. And it very well might have, and it just wasn't shown in the edit. But to me, it seemed like the judges walked away with he chose to put that much grapeseed oil in versus and then the xanthan gum versus this was him. He versus him knowing that was an error that he was trying to, remedy an accident. That was the only thing that surprised me is that he brought it up in the stew room, but we didn't see him bring it up at the judges' table. He may have, but it was curious to me.
I would say he didn't bring it up when he delivered the food to the table, because the judges seemed shocked when he brought it up at the judges' table proper and during the judging later on. So I think he was trying to pull a little bit of a fast one. Like, I don't need to tell them I put xanthan gum in this while they're eating it if I don't have to.
No, I mean the accident of accidentally spilling the grapeseed oil into the thing, and the xanthan gum was meant to kind of counteract something that had accidentally happened. I got the impression the judges thought he had purposefully put too much grapeseed oil in, and that there wasn't that spillage incident. That was the thing that surprised me that he didn't bring up.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think he maybe tried to play it off a little bit. Like, I wanted that grapeseed oil to be in there, sure, because he didn't want to be like, hey, I screwed this dish up, send me home. I think he wanted to try to play it off, hoping that they would think it was okay. We'd have to get Chef Brandon's full take on this, but that seemed like what it was to me. That sort of thing where you bring food to the table and you just own how it is, instead of trying to make excuses before they've even really gotten into it or tried everyone else's food. That's the other thing with Brandon, is he might have been hoping, like, hey, I know that this is a little bit wacky because of what I was doing at the end of my service here when I'm making what I don't know if that was an emulsion or a sauce or whatever it was. But then I'm going to try to pull this off anyway, because maybe I don't want to have to stick my neck out if I don't have to. That seemed to me like what was going on there. But the choice architecture alone with these two really was a bigger part of the problem. And certainly with Eric as well, with what you were talking about earlier, Emily, I think
all three of these speak to the greater concern that the judges had with the with this round as a whole, and with what we've talked about a lot on this episode of the podcast, with the show as a whole, where judges, where chefs really struggle to elevate the food or to do food that they're familiar with or to do food that speaks to who they are. This certainly, these three dishes, the two tartars and Eric's dish, I think really represent the choice architecture that hurts some of these chefs. Brian's, I think, to an extent, too. So what was going on with Brian's dish, Kurt? Like, he makes a dish that I thought seemed like the right idea, but he really just cut the ribs up and he didn't deliver what the judges wanted, which was ribs on the bone.
Right. And we see Justin commenting on that in the kitchen, you know, as they're kind of as the dishes are being prepared. Obviously, it doesn't seem like he necessarily called him out for it. I thought it was potentially going to be because earlier we also see Eddie telling him, you need to add salt to that. And he was like, really? I do. And so I thought maybe there was going to be like a storyline about, you know, that as an issue. But I think if there was a five hole in this episode, it was definitely your boy Brian, in terms of, you could see that he and Eddie were the most excited that Dario was here. They were the ones that were like the big, kind of Dario advocates on the team. And when I felt so bad for Brian when he saw that Eddie got to spend as part of his win, you know, time, you know, working with Dario. But, you know, I think it was really Brian's dish where I think we potentially heard the most the idea that this was supposed to be a celebration of the animal. And that's just not what they were seeing.
It's too bad. I feel bad for Brian. He's a guy who is a butcher. He works on this. This is something that's important to him. I think he wanted to show off his skills, and maybe the desire to do that, as you're saying, like that's part of it. Like that gets him in a position where he does what he does. Dario was confused by it. It sounded like the cookery was much of an issue. And it wasn't, as you were saying, Kurt, like which I thought as well, they were setting up like there might have been a flavor issue with the dish, or maybe just something with the sauce that people didn't really like the sauce per se. It just was, Brian said he was scared. He admits he was scared, you know, and that's a huge part of this. You can't cook scared on Top Chef, Emily, and I just saw the picture of you and it's incredible.
Thanks.
I had to go through way too many pictures of pizza to find that, by the way.
There were a lot back in the day.
I wonder if any of the dishes could have been saved by the chef test and bringing out a bottle of Hidden Valley Ranch and just slamming it down. I'm incorporating a sponsor. Do I get brownie points?
I
was watching Top Chef 10 yesterday, and my brother, who is not an avid watcher of the show, was watching with me, and he's like, are they always this heavy-handed with the sponsors? And I was like, oh yeah, 100%, they're always this heavy-handed with them.
I didn't, the farm, that was involved here didn't, I mean, she was at the table, the farmer, and the executive director of the farm. She got her plugs in. We got great plugs for, Chef Annie Petrie's restaurant, yep. Deca in Louisville, Top Chef, Charleston alum, Annie. And I know that her restaurant is really hot in Louisville, and really, she's done some great stuff there. And we've seen her with Gail on the commercials throughout the season, speaking of sponsors. So Annie's been a good presence in the show. I'm a little surprised we haven't seen Chef Edward Lee yet. I'm wondering if we will see him in this season. He is another Louisville chef testant, and had great success on Top Chef. So I'm expecting that we're going to see Edward Lee before the end of this season. But it was nice to see Annie here. An interesting composition of judges. We got Graham as well. Graham, he was not sure about what he at some point, I was a little disturbed by Brian. The description of his food as feminine. I think Graham does it and Brian does it as well. Am I right with this?
I missed that.
I did so. Too. Maybe that was on the Antonio cut of the episode.
the Louisville cut. Because this is Top Chef Kentucky, you get like a 3-hour episode every week, right?
Yes, it is. They deliver it via mail. It shows up in my mailbox on a thumb drive. No, Brian definitely, when he's in the stew room, after I think the initial judging has happened, and he's admitted he's cooking scared, Brian comes back and he says, I cooked pretty small feminine food. That's not what I do. And I think that Graham said it as well. After the initial tasting of the dish, Graham said that, you know, he focused on the wrong things. But maybe Graham didn't say it. Maybe that's what Brian said. I'm going off Mike Bloom's notes for Graham. So I don't want to assign that to Graham if he didn't say it, but I know for a fact that Brian said it. And I don't know exactly what he meant by that, so I wouldn't want to paint him with too broad of a brush with regard to that. I don't know that there is feminine or masculine food. I think
in
what
French
he's saying
there
is. Okay.
In the French language, I mean.
So
Point Haley.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I thought he meant delicate, but maybe he's just thinking of it from the French perspective. I should never hold that against
French,
Brian.
Maybe in French.
Yes. So he cooked what could be described as French feminine food, or Brian's feminine food, or some other version of it. But altogether, his real problem seemed to be that he was cooking scared. Have we covered everyone from the Elimination Challenge? Does anybody want? Kelsey had the shank cut with she did the braised shank with carrot and saffron grits, which looked really good.
So fitting for her. The shank cut.
Yeah, that's what we got. We got the chefs talking about just her shanking people. Yet again, Kelsey is getting this edit like she's the villain of the season. And I don't know if they're desirous of making someone a villain or if there's more to come with this. I just think she's funny. And like they're really choosing to the chefs themselves are making comments throughout. Like, I'm afraid Kelsey might murder me.
It's almost though. It's like the it's like the I don't know how to describe this. I mean, Without going to really, really nerdy terms.
Do it.
Okay. So. This may be the first time that you blend Top Chef and Dungeons and Dragons. But
underreported.
But you're here for it. No, but it's like, you know, sometimes you have this adventuring party where everybody gets together and you have that one person on your team that for some reason chose to create an evil character. You're all friends with them. They are evil, but you're just kind of sitting back and interested to see how they're going to handle the situations as they come to them based on their approach to the game, based on their alignment. So I feel like Kelsey, I hate to say she's getting the villain edit because I feel like there's nobody on the show that doesn't get along with her. But it's just like she's got that little kind of like evil wink and nod, like mischievous more.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Because really
when Antonio, you and Mike were talking about it last week, I was like, sure, she could be getting the quote-unquote villain edit, but it doesn't feel villainous. Kirk's right; It feels mischievous.
So did my nerd analogy work there?
It went right over my head. I'm so sorry.
Okay, there we go.
I think that she's really competitive. I mean, not that anybody isn't on this show, but maybe that's what we're seeing is this, like, you know, little heightened competitiveness, mischievous sort of branding. I don't like calling her a villain. I don't think that's fair.
Yeah, I don't. I think I do that in the context of like each reality TV show is going to try to find somebody they can make look like a villain or make somebody look like their.
I see it as Kelsey.
she's cooking the food that I think I most want to eat. Like I'm on Team Kelsey for sure. It is the edit that is, it's just funny to me. I think mischief is a good way to describe it, and I'm comfortable with that. But I've not thought of a mischievous person who I'm worried might stab me mischievously. So there is that.
Have you met the Carne guy?
Exactly.
He's mischievous too, and I feel like he's more likely to murder me than Kelsey.
I agree. That's for sure. I do agree with that.
Kelsey, like, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go.
Get out of here.
Yeah, leave, please. You're done. We're all red like Dario. You're cast out. Scarlet letter on you. Did you actually leave?
Kurt? Hello?
he might have, that silence might have owed to the fact that Kurt dropped the call. I don't know if we'll edit this out or not. Unfortunately, I have to edit this episode, so I'm loving this idea.
Oh, no.
I'm sure Kurt will announce his presence when he rematerializes in the room.
I am here. My Skype told me I lost my connection. I don't know. So we'll see.
I said rematerializes in the room to play into your D&D elements, Kurt. I'm excited to see her. Kelsey's food, she seemed like she did really well. She braised the shank well with the saffron. It's a lot. Saffron, of course, outside of being expensive, has some unique properties which certainly seem to impact the dish in a way that made that she wasn't on the bottom. She wasn't on the top. She did good with her meat. So at least she did well by it. I think that some other chefs really struggled with doing well by the ingredients. It seemed like Kelsey did not struggle in that way. Similarly, the cut that Michelle had, I think she struggled with. Mm-hmm. She braised the chuck with a gingerberry sauce, white corn grits with cheese, and charred fennel. Kurt, I know you love the charred fennel. That is not underreported. Dario said what she picked was quite dry, and the grits weren't a great success either. So not the best challenge for Michelle. Not on the bottom, not on the top, right in the middle. Anyone else that we missed?
I don't know. We didn't really talk. The challenge started out with the chefs invading the Top Chef pantry before they go to the Whole Foods. And one of my favorite parts was Adrian asking Sarah, it's like, oh, do you want the fennel for your dish? I'm like, yeah, sabotage Sarah. but I think if you're going to put fennel in your dish, then Michelle went the right route and charred the hell out of it. So the fennel deserves that sort of treatment.
What does charred fennel taste like? Does it get bitter, I guess?
Actually, I'm okay with cooked fennel. I can give a pass on that. But it's for me, it tastes a little bit of the anise flavor, the licorice-y flavor of fennel out of it once you cook it well.
Interesting. Anyone else want to talk about anybody from their food specifically from the challenge, or we want to break down some of the elements of the judging that we haven't hit yet?
I'm good.
All right, so we talked about the main problem with the judging and Tom excoriating the chefs and really yelling at them about what they're doing and cooking scared and not cooking their own food. But I want to talk about the great moment for Eddie. This is a great win for Eddie because the prize is really cool. Emily, do you want to talk loosely about what staging is in the chef world and why that's a significant moment for Eddie?
No, I'd like you to talk more about it, actually.
Fair enough.
It's the act of wrapping a scarf around a piece of meat.
I think staging is like a little bit of a mild internship. It's where you basically apprentice in a restaurant. You're living there in the area. It's, I think, usually referred. I've heard it in the context of chefs who grew up in America going to Europe. And like, I think Tom Colicchio famously lived over some small restaurant and he just was like, I'm cooking for my room and board and my meals. And I'm not getting paid to do this. And I'm learning how to do what you do. And that's what I'm doing. So Eddie's going to get to go post up in Tuscany for a week and just get fed and get to live in wherever Dario's butcher shop's upper room is.
Do you think Roman gets to go?
And Roman gets to go too, and Eddie will kiss the shit out of him, and everything will be great. So this is good. Eddie gets to go learn under the wing of a dragon. And the funny thing about the wing of a dragon, it's kind of warm under there. So it will be interesting to see if Eddie returned from his stage with Dario with a gleeful knife in his head, just the red eyes. Kurt, the image that you captured on your Twitter is the perfect image of Dario. It's just so terrifying. So I'm interested to see. How the experience went for Eddie, if he's done it already, and what he may have learned. The right person, I know that this is the way the show presented it, but the right person seemed to have won this challenge for sure.
Yeah, and I was obviously, Eddie being on my team, just seeing him progress from the first episode, was really happy to see him win. But I still, it's like those constant cuts back to, Brian, my heart broke for Brian as almost as much as I was joyful for Eddie.
It was difficult for sure. I mean, he could tell he was upset about what was going on. And at least he didn't make liquefied tongue, which Eric did and Graham had never heard of. I don't want to hear anything about nicknames. So this is something that I thought Eric's dish was as much of a failure. And I guess the judges did not think that. But I thought that conceptually that one was really difficult and it was so high concept. And it just, I mean, I understand the cuts that he was working with were the cuts where you're going to have a lot more difficulty just preparing a dish that's going to be more straightforward. But that I was a little surprised that that played that way. I was not so surprised that Brian and Sarah ended up in the bottom three. Definitely not surprised that Brandon ended up in the bottom three. And I wasn't surprised with the top three. This seemed to be a challenge where, because the episode itself was a little bit on the downside, there were pretty clear people who stood out and pretty clear people who were on the bottom. Did anybody feel like the wrong selection of chefs were in either the top three or the bottom three? Did anybody feel like a dish was unfairly shut out or, based on what we presented, should have been in the bottom instead of the three that were there? Nobody.
No, I feel good about the choices.
Me too.
I had a question about maybe Eric swapping in for potentially either Sarah or probably Brian, but otherwise, no. I mean, it was sad to see Brandon go, obviously, but I think the bottom three were, like, you know, pretty damn close.
Seemed pretty clear to me that Brandon would go. Do you recall, Kurt, in a moment in Top Chef at Judge's table where they looked that shocked at what went on? I mean, I don't know if it was in the cut of the episode. I saw pictures of Padma mouth agape, like shocked at what happened when he admitted the xanthan gum. Tom is like, I'm going to be scratching my head for days. Like, it just seemed like Brandon, once the xanthan gum came out and once that was discussed, like, this was a done deal. This did not seem like a tough decision for them.
Yeah, it did not look good for his prospects.
Anytime I think you get Tom Colicchio basically saying, what the hell, like at judge's table, it can't be good. I do feel bad for Brandon. He said based on his abilities, he thought he'd go a lot farther. TBD on that, maybe. And he's disappointed in going out on what was a stupid mistake. It did seem like it was a legitimate, like, flub that happened, and he pivoted in a way that there wasn't enough. There wasn't anybody to cover him with his pivot. We've seen some pivots on this season that worked out okay for the chefs. This is not one. There just wasn't enough room for this, for Brandon to make this mistake in this episode. And I think that's what we're dealing with Brandon. I think, and I don't want to spoil anything, we're going to talk about it here momentarily. Does anybody think Brandon is a legitimate threat to make his way through Last Chance Kitchen?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
It's possible.
I would say that of the people who have been eliminated, that the most likely, he and Nene were probably the ones who have gone to Last Chance Kitchen that would most likely be returnees from Last Chance Kitchen. To not spoil what's happened in Last Chance Kitchen.
I think going into Last Chance Kitchen from this episode, I think he's got a really good shot.
Yeah.
And I just think, because I think he's a, what I think is, I think what we saw from him throughout was him offering advice to other chefs, him being calm when other chefs were struggling, him making choices that put him in a position where he wasn't ultimately the one who was, their neck was on the line, or he was the one who was sticking out in a bad way. We didn't always see the best food from him, but we certainly did not see him flailing about in moments. I mean, even in this moment, like when he made his decision, he seemed very calm about it. So I think he could be well suited for the competition that Last Chance Kitchen brings. And I actually think that he's got to be somebody, if you're looking at, he's got a decent shot at making his way through the competition. Does anybody else want to say anything about the episode proper before we go into Last Chance Kitchen?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Hearing nothing, let's go into Last Chance Kitchen. So, Kurt, why don't you set up what we're dealing with Last Chance Kitchen, including maybe if you have any thoughts, or if you, Haley or Emily, have any thoughts about what happened last week with Last Chance Kitchen, because Mike and Chef Jim Smith and I talked about it. But this is certainly an interesting moment of the season for Last Chance Kitchen, to say the least.
Sure. So this, you can either call this the slimy challenge or the Tom hates okra challenge. But kind of given the slimy texture of Brandon's tartare, he and returnee from last week, Pablo, were challenged to take some of Tom's least favorite foods, especially based on texture / sliminess, and make him, make it appealing to him, like change his mind that on okra or jellyfish or mountain yam, and see if they can make a dish that actually, you know, he's impressed by and wins him over.
Emily, what about Last Chance Kitchen? I know you. I'm not asking you to weigh in on the whether it should exist or not. But
okay.
What are your thoughts about what happened with Brother Luck and his decision to kind of pull out of the competition and how the show pivoted and handled that last week?
I mean, I was not a huge fan of previous season players returning and competing. So in a way, I'm kind of glad that it's sort of refocusing on the current cast. But I don't know. Last Chance Kitchen is just really like, it's a complex series of emotions for me. And I, you know, we've obviously gone over this many times with Josh, so I don't need to, you know, rehash old conversation, but I'm kind of happy to see Pablo and Brandon, you know, face off. I think that that's a better way and you know, use of our time, I guess.
It was interesting. Emily, it was interesting that they didn't spend any time, and maybe even not that interesting, that they didn't spend any time explaining to or talking to the fact that that Brother Luck wasn't there either.
Yeah.
So they kind of seemed to gloss over that.
That I thought that was a little weird.
Yeah.
Honestly, I was like, did I miss something? Or, you know, it was just a little bit strange to me.
He's just not in the peanut gallery. Not there. Yeah. Haley, any thoughts on where we are as we go into Last Chance Kitchen this week? Like, do you feel like they did the right thing with Brother leaving and how they handled that? Was it right to have the five chefs just go for it?
Yeah, I think they absolutely did the right thing. I think it added a little bit of intrigue. I think they might have felt a little bad that they lost out to a guy who was just like, you know what, I'm good. And like, I completely understand why Brother did what he did. It doesn't mean I'm not disappointed in it. And it doesn't make me feel like it makes me feel like the returnees were a waste then. Like it makes me feel like the whole first half of Last Chance Kitchen was just a complete waste of my time.
Totally.
I definitely wanted to give you guys the chance to weigh in on that. I thought Jim had some really good thoughts on it last week and talking about,
like, I can't even imagine being Jim and being like so disappointed, especially him not even knowing that that's what happened. Like he wasn't even prepared by that. Like it was just, it was disappointing but I completely get it. And if that's his choice, like Brother's choice, then that's, he's got to do what's best for him. But it makes it a really unsatisfying blip in the middle of the season.
And I would encourage, go ahead.
And for me, it was also like, I was thinking from like Nini's perspective, like here's the guy who beat me to get back in the competition. And then he immediately comes right back and decides not to continue. And she, and like, yes, like he cooked better than her in that Last Chance Kitchen. I think, you know, Jim kind of, you know, clarified, you know, where all those winning points were. But I felt bad for her that she's the person who beat her chose not to continue on with the competition after being sent back to LCK. So I was feeling for Jim. I was feeling for Nini. But then at least the five judges or the five contestants, I guess they got another chance. So I don't know.
Well, and it seemed like maybe a good way to handle that would have been just to allow Nini to be the one that got the other chance because she was the runner up from Last Chance Kitchen, and they chose not to do that, obviously. And I'm totally fine with the choice. I just, I feel bad. I do feel bad, but I feel bad for Brother as well. Haley, I think you were sort of hinting at this. I would encourage anyone who hasn't to find Mike Bloom's Parade article and interview with Brother, which really gets into the schedule. We talked about it a little bit last week, but it was so brutal, what happened.
Oh,
and Brother really breaks it down in detail in that article, and I think when you read it that way, you're like, wow, maybe there should have been something differently done here, because the Last Chance Kitchen was the quickfire ultimately from last episode, and the winner, quote unquote, of the quickfire did not get immunity in the challenge. Did Justin have immunity this week for winning the quickfire? I'm not sure if I caught that.
Yes, I believe he did.
It wasn't a big story in the episode, but yeah, I think he did. He had to have, because they haven't gotten rid of immunity at this point. So
for purely selfish reasons, you know, with Adrian and Eddie being my in my draft, I was hoping one of them would win. And then when I saw that Justin did and that he won immunity, I was like, oh, one of my players could have had immunity. So I believe he did get immunity, Justin.
But brother did not last week when he won the quote unquote quick fire. I know that that would have been difficult, but, and I know that putting Nini right back in would have been difficult. I'm not sure there is a better way for them to handle this, but as a result, what we got this week was we got a Pablo, the winner of last week's Five Chef battle versus Brandon in Last Chance Kitchen. As you said, Kurt, setting it up ultimately, I think this is when Last Chance Kitchen does well, when it's loosely connected to what happened of the elimination in the episode, and they take inspiration from that and they do something with it. What we got were some slimy ingredients. Emily, are any of these ingredients particularly repulsive to you? I've not even heard, honestly, and I don't mind admitting it. I've not even heard of natto. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I don't really either. I don't think I would ever opt to eat jellyfish. That just sort of feels like a no-no. I've gotten stung by enough of them as a child.
So many stories.
I just keep going. Guys, my memoir later on. And then
All the things you've done before.
I know, seriously. But then, I don't know. I actually really like okra, and I get bummed out when Tom is so negative on it, even though I know that that's always been his MO. I had dried okra a couple weeks ago when I was in Charleston, and it was super tasty.
It looks like natto is a fermented soybean, Japanese. Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I've probably eaten it before.
I was going to say, it might be food that I've had and not realize what I was eating.
Totally.
But there we are. And so it is not, none of these ingredients look great to me. Haley, is the mountain yam a very popular Canadian delicacy?
I live in a pretty flat part of Canada, so there's not many mountain yams around. I don't think. I've never encountered one. But mountain yam is what they called me in high school.
This is the most disturbing running joke that we've ever had on the Top Chef Judges Table, a roundtable podcast. I was not thrilled with these ingredients. Clearly, Tom is not either. He hates slime in his food. I don't know how many people love slime in their food, but I really thought what we got was a pretty good display from both chefs. Pablo's was a little more basic in terms of how he chose to take the slime out of the ingredients. He freezes the okra. He freezes the jellyfish.
Yeah,
and grates it over a steak. And then what does he do with the okra, Emily?
He makes it into tempura, which is a great choice. I think making it really crispy is sort of the main way to kind of make okra much more appetizing.
And I'm not sure that Brandon does that sort of creative way of preparing to take the slime out of things. I think he prepares a very straightforward dish with the mountain yam noodles that he gets. But he does it in a way that, for whatever reason, even with the snails and seaweed, he takes a third element. He makes a really good dish, it seems like. Am I crazy? This looked like a really good dish.
I would have eaten the crap out of this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looked really good, and I'm wondering if part of what he took from like the carne challenge was the keeping it simple and straightforward. I mean, that obviously wasn't meant to be. I don't think it was intended that that's what you had to apply to the quick fire in this case. It was really more like the error in slime. But I think it was a lesson he learned from the carne. Maybe the idea of the kind of like cooking more true to yourself. And I was glad to see that it kind of, you know, transferred over. I was afraid that. When Brandon questions Pablo's choice of, like, why are you choosing okra? We all know that Tom hates okra. I thought that was setting Pablo up for a win. But then I thought back to all of the, and I usually don't pay this much attention to the edit. I thought back to all of those, you know, those times where it was recommended by the other chef test. You know, Pablo should listen to Brandon's advice. Brandon gives really good advice, and if Pablo doesn't listen to it. So at that point, I was like,
oh, that's a good point.
At that point, I thought that I was kind of setting up Brandon for a win over Pablo, because that really didn't go anywhere in those episodes. And so I thought might be leaning into something that impacted how this was going to turn out. And it did.
It's a good shout, Kurt. And it definitely is something that I think Brandon's intelligence and his calm demeanor really will serve him well in Last Chance Kitchen here. No swan song for Pablo here. His now third time being eliminated from the competition. Joining Caitlin on this season as three-time people who have been eliminated from the show ultimately, or just people who have been on the show, and Nini as well. I mean, we've got a lot of people who have failed multiple times in this season now, but I wouldn't say failed. I think in all the cases we're talking about, And especially with this dish with Pablo, it seemed like he did well. It just seemed like Brandon really impressed Tom with what he was able to do with the ingredients. So good for him for sure with what happened in Last Chance Kitchen. And I do think he's poised well for the rest of the season. Anything else you guys want to hit about Last Chance Kitchen this week or what we're looking forward to in Last Chance Kitchen to come?
Not for me. I'm good, I think. Although I do want to point out that on Twitter, Brandon did correct me and that he did not use candy corn in his dish a couple weeks ago. It was actually candied corn, like you had said, Antonio. So it was a typo on the descriptions of the dishes. So I do want to redact and correct from a couple weeks ago that the idea, Brandon's correct, the idea of using candy corn in a dish is quite insane. So it was candied.
I'm surprised no one wants to talk about the jumpsuits. The ghost.
I do. I want to talk about the jumpsuits.
Okay. All right. Here, please tee off.
That's the only thing I care about in this little Last Chance Kitchen thing. God, I want to see Pablo and or Brandon in a jumpsuit next week. Nini is a fashion plate. I love her. I noticed her wearing her great jumpsuit. Great, not gray. And then I thought, oh, what's God, what's her name? Catherine, Kate. Oh, my God.
Caitlin
wearing hers. And I was like, oh, my gosh, she's also wearing a jumpsuit. And then I didn't notice until Nini pointed out that Natalie was also wearing a jumpsuit and they all looked great and it was amazing. And I love that kind of, you know, togetherness in Last Chance Kitchen.
I just hope nobody had to go to the bathroom. That's the worst part.
That is why I don't wear many jumpsuits.
Same.
I have to TMI. I have to pee about every 20 minutes. So
underreported
is
you would just be undressing yourself all the time.
My boobs would be so cold always.
Yes.
You said she's that Nini's a fashion plate. What part of the cut is the plate again? That's what Sarah got, right?
Oh my God, that was awful. Yes. And great.
By the way, I'm loving Sarah's Instagram. There was an Instagram video that she had posted, not in stories, where it's just her, it's like on boomeranging, her just like dumping salt.
Salt is great.
The salt, and it was basically saying, you know, we put salt out on the front stoop so you can come and visit us during the winter weather. It's just her just like throwing salt around the kitchen. So strong Instagram game from Chef Sarah.
Yeah, that's Freight House Food on Instagram, yes. @FreightHouseFood.
How do I spell that? Like freight, like a trick?
Yes, F-R-E-I-G-H-T, like eight with fra in the front.
I'm leaving. Goodbye.
Great video, great Instagram game. Love that. I thought the same thing. I love that salt video. It's really funny. So, salt to the stoop. Come on out. I think that's the Paducah, Kentucky version of shoveling the driveway. So they are certainly ready to take your reservations or serve you at Freight House Food. So next week, though, we're going to Lake Cumberland in Kentucky, a lake that Kentuckians of all stripes will know very well for sure. Definitely in line with the houseboat elements. It is very houseboat centric. It is kind of weird in many respects. Shout out to my friend Dan O'Brien, who wrecked a houseboat at my friend Gary's bachelor party. Dan will never live that down. And there are some really funny things that people. I'm sorry.
Was Lake Cumberland was that a good eclipse viewing site? This most recent that solar.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think in that area was where that belt was, where you could really get a good shot at the eclipse. So that's part of it.
I have family in Kentucky, and they were kind of trying to organize kind of a family road trip to a lake in Kentucky to do an eclipse viewing. And for some reason, I think that's what it was, Lake Cumberland. So I was just trying to connect the dots in my own head. Sorry, viewers, listeners that you had to join.
Yeah. How dare you, Kurt, take this podcast off the rails? Like 2 hours.
Wait,
into
can we just go back to like wrecking a houseboat? How do you do that?
Well, I think
sink?
You just bashed it into the dock and caused a bunch of damage. I think is what ultimately happened.
Okay.
Yeah, this Kentucky Lake Cumberland is Kentucky's Lake Como. Don't let the green water fool you. It's beautiful. I've got an uncle who has a cabin down there. It's near Somerset,
cabin
Kentucky.
Or a boat cabin boat.
What Cabin Boat, the cabin boy, Chris Elliott lives there with my uncle. Really weird. It's in near Somerset, Kentucky, and I had, you know, gone to Lake Cumberland as growing up. And then when I went to college, I met a guy from Somerset, and his dad came to visit, and he said, "Are you part of the Ohio Navy?" And I was like, "What's the Ohio Navy?" He was like,
Every weekend
they bring their boats to Somerset. And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, like, okay, so you look at everyone as the Ohio Navy, because apparently this is a lake that people go to from Ohio." So it is definitely well known in the state. And looking forward to seeing. Unfortunately, it does not look like it's going to go well for Adrian. Spoiler alert. She looks like she gets some seasickness or something. And of course, the engine goes out on the boat, because what would it be without the battery dying? It's not going to be a great episode for these chefs, but they're going to have fun on the lake. So at least they'll get a break from the. I'm sorry. Wasn't it just Christmas in Kentucky? This is so confusing. Now it's going to be summer. Very confusing, but I'm looking forward to that. Anything else anybody wants to hit? What about plugs? Haley, what do you want to plug? What podcasts have you been working on recently?
So The Bachelor is back in full swing, so that means Amy and I are as well. We've been covering the episodes. They've been bad. Hopefully they'll get better. I figured the episodes of the show have been bad, so maybe skip the show, just listen to our podcast. And you can check out my blog, strongtakes.ca. And follow me on Twitter and Instagram at @hstrong_.
That was a great plug.
Thanks.
Yeah. Emily, do you want to plug anything at this time?
You can check out more vintage photos of my neck wrapped on Instagram. It's the same handle as my Twitter, which is Emlet, like an omelet with an E. Otherwise, I have nothing going for my life right now. Just this podcast, guys. So just kidding. No, I have a lot of things going on. Anyway.
Curtis, what about you, my friend?
I am at Kurt Clark with 2 C's, both on Twitter and on Instagram. Actually have no travels planned for a while, which is heartening, but you can kind of look in the history to see a bunch of food photos. I'm trying to step up my Instagram stories game and get up there with Chef Sarah in terms of what I share. And I did escape room number 105 yesterday and was victorious. And so,
spoiler alert,
a baseball bat like a terrifying Dario.
Carne.
Chef Jim said he was very jealous of your Instagram and social media travels, Kurt. So people pay attention. People know what you're up to and people like it. For me, follow me at AC Mazzaro. And I recently joined Rob and Akiva Winokur on Rob Has a Podcast, on their Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, where they talk about a separate topic decided by a spinning wheel every week. Somebody decided that I should go on that podcast and talk about popular conspiracy theories. So I did that with Rob and Akiva. I didn't talk about crazy ones like that would make your black helicopters or New World Order head spin. I talked about things like Michael Jordan, and was he suspended for gambling or did he actually retire? Talked about the new Coke controversy and a couple of other things. So I had a lot of fun doing that. Check that out at robhasawebsite.com. And I'll be back with Josh Wigler in the next couple of weeks to talk about HBO's Succession. We've been talking about TV at postshowrecaps.com. Periodically, some of the stuff we watched in 2018, like The Haunting of Hill House and Maniac and other things we really liked from the year in television. We're definitely going to be talking about Succession when Josh returns to availability for podcasting. That's why he's not here this week. Some form of us will be back here on this podcast next week. Again, you can subscribe so you don't miss an episode. It's robhasawebsite.com/topchef. And definitely check out Mike Bloom's work. I know he'll be having something with regard to this week's episode, but I highly recommend that Brother Luck article. If you've not read that, it's parade.com/member/Mike Bloom. You can see all the stuff he's written for Parade and all of his Top Chef stuff is there. Anything else you guys want to hit before we take off here? All right. Well, I think Mike's sign off is you may now pack your knives. Is that what he says? You may now pack your knives. But that's what we're going to do. You may now pack your knives. Thanks for listening. And we look forward to talking about next week's episode. Take care, everybody.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
In my dentist's office.
More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.